Welcome to the Patient Engagement Team-Based Care Conference Call. My name is Jeanette, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Nancy Beaumont. Ms. Beaumont, you may begin.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Jeanette. Hello, my name is Nancy Beaumont, and I'm with the South Dakota Foundation for Medical Care, and I would like to welcome you today to our webinar on the topic of patient engagement and team-based care. This is the fourth in a series of webinars on patient engagement brought to you through our collaborative work with quality improvement organizations in North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and here in South Dakota. Following our presentation today, we will be opening the lines for questions, and our guest presenter today is Dr. Christopher Tashin. Dr. Tashin has a passion for practicing quality care at an affordable price. Consumer Reports recently named his clinic number one in Western Wisconsin for quality and value in diabetes and heart care. This has been attributed in part to implementation of the state-of-the-art electronic health record, allowing direct access to patient data, changing the management of chronic disease from reactive to proactive. Chris is board certified by the American Academy of Family Practice and is currently the chief of medicine for River Falls Area Hospital, a regional facility of Allina Hospital. Special medical interests include EMR, public health, emergency medicine, quality care and measurement, and physician leadership. He is also serving on the Information Exchange Workgroup for ONC pertaining to Stage 2 and 3 of Meaningful Use. He serves as WITEC, the Wisconsin Regional Extension Center's Medical Director. Chris earned his Doctor of Medicine from the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, while also attending Graduate School of Business working towards an MBA. He most recently graduated from Physician Leadership College at St. Thomas University. Dr. Tashin resides in River Falls, Wisconsin, and his hobbies include Boy Scouts, Rotary, computers, surprise, kayaking, and bicycling. Dr. Tashin, welcome, and I will turn the call over to you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. I'm delighted to be here today and to kind of share our story. And among all the things that I do that matters most to me is I'm a primary care physician working in a two-physician, one PA office in a small town of 1,500 to 2,000 people in rural Wisconsin. So I speak from the trenches, and this is where the passion comes from, because the patients I treat are the people I work with and see every day. I wanted to also give a plug for Million Hearts, is that the initiative from the CDC and the ONC on preventing a million heart attacks and strokes, and we will talk about that a little bit later on. So today I'd like to talk about team-based care, and it really starts with a basic fundamental physician, and that's that care and healthcare is a physician problem. And changing it to a team challenge. And it sounds fairly basic, but it really is an incredible mind shift and a mind change for us. And as I said, we're a small-town clinic. There's only two docs and a PA, but it was difficult for us to get our arms wrapped around it. We had decided we wanted to practice better care, and the three of us worked our tails off and still didn't get the results we wanted or that we thought we should be getting or that our patients deserved. It wasn't until we made the decision that, you know what, we can't do this by ourselves. We need to involve the entire team. And the team is everybody. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the team is more than just the physician team or the nursing team. But it includes some people that you don't normally think of. And again, we'll go over that. So again, it meant that the physicians had to give up total ownership of the patient care. And again, even as motivated as we were, it is a real mind shift to say, okay, I'm willing to let my medical assistants, to let my lab tech or my care coordinator pick up the ball when I drop it. Because unfortunately, half the time when I drop it, I'm not even aware that I dropped the ball. So what this means, though, is that if we're going to involve the team, we had to train them. So we had to set up protocols and standards of this is what we think good blood pressure control is. You know, that every person that works at our clinic knows that our desire is to get people's blood pressure below 140 over 90. And not in everyone, but in, you know, in the vast majority of patients. And even the people at the front desk are acutely aware of this. The nursing staff and those that take the blood pressure are aware of it. We had to train the lab staff. And then we came up with care coordinators as something that we trained ourselves, and as a new person, as we took one of our medical assistants and basically taught them disease management from our standpoint of a small clinic and what we expected of them. Because what you'll see in the future is these care coordinators are people that really changed our care from being reactive to proactive. They're the people that reach out into the community. And as I said, last but not least is the front office. Nobody's care improves if they don't get in the door. We can't help anybody if our front office staff doesn't understand and work together with us to bring our patients through the door in a timely fashion. We have a basic philosophy. If they want to call us, we want to see them. And if that means we stay later, work over the lunch hour, so be it. But we use advanced access. And our goal is to get everybody in when the patient wants to be seen. We meet them at their level. So the second thing it means is that my patients are my partner's patients. And what does that mean? How many times in the old paradigm of physicians do you say, well, and you know, Mrs. Smith, I saw you for your urgent care need, but your blood pressure is a little elevated, so why don't you go back and see Dr. Lieski and have her take another look and decide if she wants to change something about it. We don't do that anymore. If we notice and we look and we say, gee, the last four or five blood pressures have been elevated, we deal with it. And basically makes every visit a hypertension visit. And we have agreed that it's okay if she starts my patient on a new hypertensive med. Likewise, it's expected that I'm going to be helping manage her patients as well when the timing is right and when the patient's in front of us. And so there's no more of this, what I would call collegiality between docs, trying not to step on each other's toes at our patient's expense. The bottom line is everything that we do now is focused around the patient. It's not focused around the physician. And we're much more concerned with, how do we make sure we don't drop the ball for each and every patient? How do we make sure they get the care that they expect from us and that we really want to give? And that means, again, my patients are my partner's patients. My partner's patients are my patients. That includes our physician assistant as well, as it's our expectation of him that he addresses it as well. So this is kind of a nice pictogram. It talks about kind of a little small office, much like ours, and it talks about everybody matters. You know, you see the physician top and center, but also the nursing staff. We talk about the receptionist that we talked about before. Again, it's important for them to make sure the patients get in. The office manager has to see to it that we're staffed adequately and that we can see the people we need. And then I wanted to talk a little bit more about the physician assistant, because we use our physician assistant as a little bit different team member than I think the average clinic does. Yes, for at least half the day, our physician assistant sees his own patients and has a steady patient load of his own. But equally, he also is spending time working on quality measures, actually assisting the other two physicians, Dr. Lieski and myself. And by that I mean he goes through our inboxes. He takes all the normal labs and clears them and gets them out. He deals with any miscellaneous questions. He answers all the faxes from the nursing home. He goes to the nursing home every day and puts out all the little fires that basically get in our way of taking good care of our patients in the clinic. And he basically makes our life better. And so while I hate to admit it, when I'm gone, I'm not missed too much. But when our PA is gone, he's very missed, because then we're, as physicians, are doing all of that work that he's been delegated to do that actually prevents us from seeing patients and treating them in a manner that we have become accustomed to. So again, it's a different way of looking at a physician assistant, as somebody who actually assists the physicians and helps them practice care as opposed to just another provider. And we found that to be extremely helpful. He also answers any questions from the office staff and can work with the care coordinator to manage that as well. So in the next slide is a little scheme that talks about when we see, if you notice, the provider visit is a little brown square, golden square, you know, fourth over. But that's such a small portion of our patient's health and such a small portion of how we have to work on quality. But the quality process has to occur right from the beginning and all the way through to the post-visit. So pre-visit, our nursing staff will screen the patients. I'll show you how we do that and how we get them ready so we tee up which patients are at high risk, which patients are controlled, which patients need lab work, which patients may not be taking their medications, on and on. We actually do homework on our patients before they come. And I told you we do a lot of same-day registrations, so we need to take advantage of the tools in our EMR to make them, you know, to be able to do that real time as opposed to having to do it the day before or something along that line. It talks about registration. It talks about getting the patient settled, the intake, how to take appropriate blood pressure, how to retake it, when to retake it, what to, you know, using the appropriate size cuff, making sure their feet are flat on the ground and not crossed, and all the things that, you know, it was a good refresher course for all of us to go over what's really involved in a blood pressure that we're going to use to actually change people's medication management. Then the checkout, making sure the appropriate things are done, and again, we use our computer to make sure that every patient has returned to clinic so they know when it's expected. And in addition to that, if there's any lab work or anything that we would like done, we put that in our return to clinic order so that when I see somebody follow up with hypertension, even if it's a year down the road, I'm going to want to see their kidney function, their sodium, potassium, fasting blood sugar. And I put all those orders in the chart at the time I check the patient out so that when the patient comes, all of that testing can be done a day or two ahead of time so that when the patient sees me, we can make the absolute most of that visit. It makes it waste less of our patient time. It makes the visits much more actionable. And we don't have to say, well, let's draw some lab work and I'll tell you when it comes back if we're going to change anything. And it, again, uses the computer the way it is meant to be used. So many people use the EHR and look at it as a hurdle or something that slows you down or something that gets in the way or changes your workflow. We look at the computer as a hammer. It is nothing more than a tool. You know, and if you use the hammer to pound on glass, you won't get results you like. If you use the hammer to drive in nails and to build things, you'll get excellent results. And so we basically have taken the position from day one. The computer is here to help us. It's not our intention that we need to do stuff to make the computer work better. It's the other way around. And so we have customized everything to our computer to make it work for us. So then I wanted to talk a little bit about stages of meaningful use, because these are really well designed in my opinion, and they actually help us design better processes to improve care. So most of you are stage one certified now. Basically the whole purpose of stage one was to capture data and get that data in a format where you can then react on it and then you can do something with it. And again, we'll show you examples of that. Stage two is now people are starting to collect data for attestation, but really about information exchange, care coordination, population management, things along those lines. And then stage three is going to be all about improved outcomes, because in the end, that's what we're all here for. We're here to get improved outcomes for our patients, and I'm going to show you real-time, real-life data that shows how you can actually document how many hearts you can save, how many eyes you can save, how many amputations you can prevent. And to me, that's what it's all about. Now, we're working with the OMC to make rules for stage three to maybe not have quite as many hoops that you have to, or hurdles that you have to pass. But as I said, if you can prove improved outcomes, that will do away with a lot of reporting. If you can show that you have better control of your diabetics, better control of your hypertensive patients, that's going to be enough. and be a significant part of attestation for stage three. And I think to me that's what this is all about, is improving the outcome for our patients. So the Million Hearts Initiative, very important. It's a pretty substantial initiative by the CDC and CMS. And the goal is to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes in 5 years. And if you think about it, that's a lot of morbidity and mortality. And the question is, can we do that? Do we have the capabilities? And will it work? And I think I'm going to show you that, yep, we can, and yes, it makes a difference. And the difference is going to be in our patients. And as providers, to me, that's the thing that's most important. So heart disease, as most people know, is the leading killers in the United States. Because we have done a better job, cancer is taking it over. And again, I think that speaks to better care, but we're still looking at 800,000 deaths a year. $444 billion in healthcare costs. I mean, significant cost and lost productivity. You know, treatment costs are a dollar for every $6 spent. So there's definitely a good return on investment. And then last but not least is this greatest contributor to racial disparities and life expectancy. And again, as we have to be customizing our care to our patient load, and in my mind, we, you know, one of the reasons people ask me in stage one, why do we have to ask people what race they are, what ethnicity, or along that lines? And the answer is, if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. You know, and our goal is to improve it for everybody and to be able to measure it. So again, in our feelings, is that's a good thing to be able to measure, because we want to do it. So the key components is, first of all, is optimizing care. So preventing a heart attack is much easier than treating it. We focus on the ABCs because we're docs and we can remember ABCs. We'll go over what the simple ABCs are. We're going to use technology to help maybe manage populations. And then we're looking at simple clinical innovations. And we're going to talk about innovations that I can leave you with today that will cost your administrations a quarter or maybe a dollar to implement, you know, clinic-wide, maybe $2 implant-wide, but will actually improve the care that you deliver. And I don't know any administrator that's going to balk at those kind of numbers. And then I think we're mistaken if we don't, you know, talk about community prevention as well, because we figure, and studies out of Wisconsin and Kendrick showed that we are probably accountable for 20% of health, but that means 80% of health happens outside our offices, and so we need to work on that aspect as well. So smoking prevention, reduced salt intake, and reduction in trans fat, getting everybody involved. And if that means we work with the churches, we work with the community groups, we work with the Rotaries, we work with whoever, is to get public health involved and basically work at a community-wide level as well. So again, if you want to take the pledge for the Million Heart, it's that you are going to treat high blood pressure. There's nothing in here that, as far as I can tell, that I haven't signed up for when I went to medical school and that I haven't wanted to do to provide the absolute best care for my patients. But treat blood pressure, use aspirin when it's necessary, discuss the goals of your patients, coach your patients to develop heart healthy habits, ask patients about smoking, provide help stopping, ask about barriers to the medications and adherence. And here, you know, we feel that and there's something that we measure because we can measure it in our electronic record. 85 to 90% of the medications we prescribe are generic, especially for high blood pressure. The medications do not need to be expensive, and they do not need to be the reason that patients can't get their blood pressure under control. And then last but not least, of course, we agree to use technology and let technology help us. It's really interesting. We're learning that that a lot of the public health and as far as population management, as we're learning from our friends in the veterinary side who have been taking care of this and doing a better job at us for years and years. So the simple, basically clinical prevention is focusing on the ABCs, aspirin, blood pressure control, cholesterol, stop smoking. And We all know that, and the question becomes, how do we measure it? How do we go after this so that we can do it in a systematic approach, relying on our memories, relying on good intentions, doing the best we can is not nearly as good as having a systematic approach that involves everyone on the team, from the front office staff, again, to the clinical people, to the lab techs, to the care coordinators, is a much better way of doing it. So their goals for Million Hearts, and I'll tell you, our goals are much higher. 70% of people on aspirin. It's kind of sad that right now we only have 40% of the people who should be on aspirin are on it. Our goal is to have that at 100%. Blood pressure control, again, the national average is only 46% of the people who need to be controlled are controlled. Our goal, they would like to see it at 70%. I would like to see it at 90%. And I'll show you in cases where we've achieved that and been able to maintain that. I don't think anybody ever expects blood pressure control to be 100, because if you're at 100%, you're actually harming patients, and we're not interested in doing that. There are certain patients that side effects and the problems of bringing their blood pressure under 140 over 90 just aren't worth the side effects or the clinical problems that may be caused by that. Cholesterol management, again, with the advent of statins, and recently we heard that the American College of Cardiology thinks that virtually most people should be on statins nowadays. But we can have much better control of cholesterol management and get the LDLs below 100. Again, the goal there is 70%, but again, I don't really see a reason why we can't get it lower. And then smoking cessation is probably the number one thing that we can do as physicians to improve the care of our patients. And it's kind of sad that it's not using high-tech equipment, it's not using the aspirin or our blood pressure pills or cholesterol management, but just getting people stopping smoking is probably the number one thing we can do to improve their health. It's also probably one of the number one things we can do to improve their pocketbook. Again, anything we can do there is worthwhile. So, I've told you about my dollar solution or less than $1 solution, and you're looking at it right here. So what this is a little piece of construction paper that we printed, rechecked blood pressure on it, and we laminated it, and we glued a magnet to the back of it. And we have one of these little magnets for every one of the exam rooms that we have. And this little cue does a number of things. So in every single room, this is on the inside of the door. When the medical assistant takes the blood pressure, if it's above 140 over 90, she moves it from the inside of the door to the outside of the door. That cues her to say, I got to pay attention to blood pressure when I take it. If I have time, I will recheck the blood pressure. If I don't have time, I'm going to cue the doc to recheck the blood pressure. So that even on a busy day, when I go in to see this patient, before I even know what I'm seeing the patient for, I have a cue that says, recheck this patient's blood pressure. Their blood pressure is above goals. Let's see if it's real, or we just rushed the patient too much, or if we gave the patient a chance to sit down and rest and kind of collect their thoughts, what happens. And oftentimes it goes down, but oftentimes it doesn't. And again, it brings blood pressure to the forefront of your mind, so it makes it much harder to skip over or miss. The second thing it does is if that blood pressure is normal, the recheck blood pressure sign stays inside the room. That being the case, what happens is the patient usually seizes it, and they say, oh, gee, there's a sticker there that says recheck the blood pressure. However, when you tell them, no, that's a good thing that it's on the inside, they actually feel pretty good about it, and they know that we're paying close attention to their blood pressure. And so most of my patients know, and they look, and they say, Doc, it's not on the inside. What's my blood pressure? And it's become something that's just become part of the culture of our clinic, is that cues us in. And again, the cost of this is what, maybe a quarter? nothing that's very expensive. I'd love to tell you that this was my idea and I thought of it, but to be honest with you, we stole it from our friends in New Richmond, and we don't know who they got it from. So, you know, my response is spread the word. Anything quality related should be begged, borrowed, or stolen. It's free for the taking. Next, we talk about high tech, because again, this is a talk about computers and data. So one of the things we did when we purchased our EMR, we made sure that we could extract the data out of it. So we bought the reporting arm of the EMR, and we bought a module that allows us to pull the data out, and we export it into a simple Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. It goes in there because Excel is very powerful, and it can do all the grunt work. You know, before we had this, we used to do this by hand, and at best we could do it once or twice a year, but it was very expensive, very time-consuming, and by the time we got all the data pulled, it had been at least a month, and some of the data was already out of date. Now that we can do this on the computer, we can pull this real-time, and we can look at it, and we look at these numbers every single month, and we act on them before they become out of date, and we deal with them. So again, the first thing is just put it in Excel. Once it's in Excel, we can start playing with it, and I'll show you how that works. The second thing we did is we moved it from Excel to an Access database. And the reason we did this is you can get an Access database reader that's free. You can download it from Microsoft. You can put it on every desktop. And the reader part of it, which will take the data out of Excel, is very convenient way of doing it, and we can use it to sort. So we can sort it by patients, we can sort it by providers, we can sort it by scorecard, we can sort it by disease, and you'd be able to see that a little bit. But that's why we did that. And again, we're a small clinic. We don't have vast resources. We can't spend, you know, $100,000 on this, that, or the other thing. We can't spend, for the most part, $1,000 on this, that, or the other thing. So this is a very efficient, cost-efficient way of working with it. The next thing we do is we generate these patient lists. And just so everybody's clear, that everybody's last name here is test patient. We are not going to violate any HIPAA rules. But what you see is across the top, you can see we can sort it by diabetes, hypertension, ischemic vascular disease. We can sort it by age. We can sort it by provider. We can sort it by any number of things that are on that page. The second thing you will notice is that, and again, these are test patients, there's a large amount of yellow. And the yellow is saying something's out of range. And it could be out of range because the number's too high. It could be out of range because it's been more than a year or more than a defined time period. But once you set up this Excel spreadsheet, Excel will mark every patient for you and then sort it for you so that you can then start working with these numbers. And it saves an incredible amount of time and an incredible amount of just what I would call grunt work that you let the computer do. Again, the computer in our viewpoint is a hammer. It is nothing more than a tool. And if you use the tool to do the work you want it to do the work it's designed to do, then I think you can get the results you're looking for. If you use it to do things to just replicate paper and to try and do a paper chart on an electronic screen, you're going to be pretty unhappy. And you're going to say, gee, this thing doesn't work very well. It doesn't do what I wanted it to do. So again, this is talking more about the use of filters, and I think we talked enough about that. But now we can start generating scorecards, and we can generate these cards pretty much same day. And the scorecard says, pulls up the patient, says, you know, Lawrence W. test patient comes in today, and we need to know what his problems are, and he doesn't have diabetes, but he has hypertension and IBD. So it tells you what you need to do, and if you look there, it says, blood pressure is controlled, but you see a blue highlight. The blue highlight says that number is too old. You need to recheck a blood pressure, which we're going to do anyway. But it also says the LDL is too old. An LDL of 70 is great, but it's been more than a year, and because it's been more than a year, the computer is telling my nurse in the lab tech, go ahead, you have permission to draw a cholesterol profile and take care of this on this patient. I don't need to write an order for that. We have standing orders for that. Let the computer do it. Let your team members help you. Let them carry the ball when appropriate. And that way I don't forget to order it before the visit's over. And I know it's done. And you can see that it talks about the aspirins there and that everything is neat and tidy. And again, that's the beauty of an access database. The other thing you can do is you can do provider scorecards. And we put this up. This is for our main clinic up north, 50 miles north of us. You know, as I told you, we're only a satellite with two docs and a PA. But what you see is you can sort it by provider. And when we go provider, we go by a couple of different things. First of all, we use the team. That every physician is listed with their medical assistant because, again, we view that care is a team-based sport and that you live and die with a team. So if you're at the top, both of you get the credit. If you're at the bottom, both of you, you have to look at each other and saying, where do we need to help? And while I think of physicians as being incredibly competitive people, I can tell you medical assistants are equally as competitive, and nobody wants to be in that bottom, you know, third of this list. And as I said, every month we publish this and we tape it to the wall. You know, we want to be transparent with the group of where we're at, who's doing what. And we have seen significant improvement by doing this. So, what are the improvements? In just 4 years, the Elsner's Medical Clinic reported the following improvements. Bottom line, we went from 73%. So when every doc was doing their very best, and we made this concerted effort, the best we could do was 73%. This went to 97%. This is still at 97%. I realize these are older numbers. These come from Minnesota Community Measurement. So that you know that these are not our numbers, but somebody auditing us and coming up with these numbers. And among patients with heart disease, we went from 68% to 97%. Again, it says currently as December 2012, now it's as of December 2013, all patients in our clinic have their blood pressure controlled at 90% or better. As I said, I don't think we're ever going to get to 100%. I don't think that's the right thing. But if we can get to 90%, that's a pretty substantial improvement. And when the national average is somewhere below 50%, that's a reason for patients to come through your door. That's a reason to feel good about the care that you deliver. And that goes all the way from the front office staff to the nursing staff to the lab staff to the care coordination and even to the physicians. So I would be remiss if I didn't show you my own current progress, and I'll be getting another one now pretty soon in January. These are my diabetic patients, and these are the patients in my patient panel that are attributable to me. And you look at blood pressure control, 95 out of 100, pretty good. A1C, only 74 out of 100, still better, much better than the national average, but still there's room for improvement there, LDL at 85, some room. Aspirin, we're at 100%, tobacco. National average is somewhere around 77. We're at 82, so that's good, but definitely could be better. But here's the thing that matters. The data says you've got to have all five of those numbers in control. Okay? So when you do that, we're at 52%. So a significant reduction. Now, the national average is less than 20%, but even so, 52% I think we can improve on. Our target is 60% as a clinic last year. We just got our numbers back for 2013 now. We're at 56 or 57%. So we didn't quite hit 60%, but we're getting closer. And what you can see is even in a highly functioning clinic, we went down. At least my clinic patients went down. We were at 55% in August, 52% in November, and again back up to 56% at the end of December for the entire clinic, not just me. So again, what that shows you is these numbers are in flux, and you have to work them every day. You have to keep this at the forefront. You can't really rest and put it in the coast mode. So what is it that we actually do? Well, what we actually do is we query our EMR, and who does this is Roseanne. And Roseanne is our care coordinator. And what Roseanne does is she runs these reports and has Excel categorized them, and she has a list of all of our patients that are in control. So right off the top, half of our list with diabetes we can set aside and say, great deal. Don't even have to deal with these people. So the more people we have under control, the less time I have to spend with Roseanne working on management. It's just another added incentive. But the next thing that Excel does is it says, show me all of my patients that have four out of these five categories in control, but doesn't have the fifth category in control, and highlight it for me. And then over a noon hour once a month, Roseanne and I go through this patients one by one, and we say, is it likely that this patient is going to get their blood pressure under control? Or, oh my goodness, I can't believe we haven't done an LDL on this person in a year and a half. Let's call them in and see and get them in here and get their lab work done. But again, it becomes a much more proactive way of treating your patients. Our patients are just astonished that we would be willing to call them up and say, you know what? Without your asking, we've been monitoring your status, and we don't think the care we're delivering is good enough. We think you need to be doing this. We think you need to be doing, we want better blood pressure control, or we want better diabetes control, whatever it is that's missing, and we're willing to work with you to get there. The response from our patients have been phenomenal. The other thing I should say is the person doing this is Roseanne. Now, Roseanne is not some faceless, nameless nurse from Pennsylvania that the insurance company hired to call. Roseanne is somebody they will see in the office. Roseanne is somebody who will meet with them and work with their care plans, especially with our patients with chronic disease and what we would call our frequent flyers that tend to be on the sicker end of the spectrum. So when she calls, they know who it is. They know, they're willing to work with her. They're willing to be part of the team as well, because after all, is probably the most important part of the team member, you know, is the patient themselves. And so this is where we've used our computer to manage this data and become much more proactive. Now, the next, so I wanted to bring that up. So this is an incredible slide here, and what this shows is I took this from a health insurance plan, and it shows that in 2000 how many hearts, legs, and pairs of eyes they save in their diabetics by the improved control. So if you look at that green triangles, the green line of triangles, that's how many new retinopathy cases per 1,000 people. And literally saving 745 pairs of eyes each year for 32,000 members. So what does that mean for our members? You know, if we translate that down, that's a couple sets of eyes that we're saving every year with our improved control. And our improved control is slightly better than what they had, and so that's how those numbers are. So those are real people. Those are real people in our practice that can see and read and not suffer the consequences of diabetic retinopathy because we're paying attention to their care. Same thing with amputations. It's an amputation every couple of years that even in our practice that we can document that we save just by the better control that we have. Again, so you can bring it into real people. You can see this. It's actually Mrs. Smith who would have probably lost her leg if we hadn't taken better care of her diabetes, which means she can get out to the market, she can get out and play with her grandchildren, she can do the things she needs to do. And then if you look at the heart attacks, I mean, to me, that's pretty dramatic. You know, 5 out of 1,000, so those are the heart attacks that we're preventing. So in our clinic, you know, between the three of us, we're probably preventing 1 to 2 heart attacks a year. Those are grandparents that can play with their grandchildren. the cost, the implications of the cost of that on the community, both in just the human cost as well as the actual financial cost. And as I said, you can bet that that all of this is quantitatable, you know, quantifiable, and that you can actually show that there is reason for doing this and that you're actually impacting patients' lives and you're actually making a difference in real people. And the good news for us is it's real people we know. It's our patients. It's the people we take care of every day that we have made this the pledge to do the best that we can. So, again, the proof is in the pudding, and the proof is measurable. So, for our patients, we have 1 million hearts. It was a really odd being called by the CDC and CMS one day and saying, we've decided that we're going to congratulate 2 clinics in all of the United States because their control is better. And they said, we want to know what you're doing, and we want to know if it can be propagated and if it can be spread to the rest of the country. And so again, for a small clinic in rural Wisconsin, it was a pretty big honor for us and we were pretty excited about it. But again, the key to this was it's team-based. It's not the physicians, it's not 1 or 2 people, but it's involving absolutely everybody. So the question was, we're a small satellite of a bigger system. What about the rest of the system? Well, I got news for you. The people at what we call the mothership or the main clinic, They were happy for us. I don't want to get it wrong, but they were wondering, well, how come they're getting recognized and we're not? And we basically told them it works both ways. And in some ways, it's easier in a small clinic, but even in a larger clinic where you have 18 docs, you can do it. You can divide it into separate units, separate pods, and basically have a competition inside and basically work together. So this year, River Falls, which is the main clinic, and I can say it now, I couldn't say it at the beginning of the month, is now not just a finalist, but River Falls, which includes River Falls, Ellsworth, and Spring Valley, is a Million Hearts recipient, and 1 of 9 clinics selected throughout the nation for superior blood pressure care. And again, this is just a small, independent clinic working on its own without a lot of resources, but somebody who has a system and a plan in place and makes use of all of our team and brings everybody on board. And every time we drop the ball as providers or somebody else drops the ball, there's somebody there to pick it up and make sure that these patients get the care that we've promised them. We talked a little bit at the beginning that, do our patients know, do they realize it? Well, when you're on the... when you're being rated in Consumers Reports and people are coming in and saying, gee, doc, I had no idea that you guys practice this kind of care, and we're pretty happy to be here, and we kind of thought you guys were doing well, but this kind of cements it. It's very good from a marketing standpoint. It's very good from a public relations standpoint, and it's just plain and simply good medicine. So, in the end, as you can expect, that what we're saying here is it's all about the teamwork. And this is our team. This is everybody. And it's the office manager, it's the nursing staff, it's the front office desk, it's the lab tech. It's the person who, one of the people there is actually one that runs the insurance claims. They all have to participate, and everybody's involved. So, what we're asking is that people become, take the pledge, become 1 in 1 million. I hate to say it, that South Dakota and Wisconsin are both the same color, and that we're actually behind Illinois and Iowa. I don't ever like to be behind Illinois and Iowa as far as number of pledges, by state or territory. But the bottom line is we can all take the pledge and make the effort to give our patients better care, and to give it measured care and a systematic approach so that we can, fulfill our promise to reduce 1 million heart attacks and strokes. And it's not too late to do that. You can do that at the Million Hearts website, millionhearts.hhs.gov. Again, if you're a Facebook person, they're on Facebook. If you're a Twitter person, you can follow their Twitter feed. But it's something that you can measurably show that you can prevent heart attacks and disease in your patients. So So these are resources. You have a copy of these slides. These are just for people who would like that. I got 3 or 4 minutes left. I wanted to do one other thing to show you how technology can really change the way you practice your medicine. About a year, year and a half ago, the FDA came out and said, you know, the most common blood pressure pill, i.e. amlodipine, and the most common cholesterol pill, i.e. generic simvastatin, don't play well together. And if you're treating people with ischemic vascular disease, diabetes, whatnot, there's an opportunity for drug interactions and things that you don't want. In the old paper days when this happened, we would try and remember, and the next time somebody came in, and we'd say, oh, by the way, I see you're on simvastatin and amlodipine, and we should have a conversation about that. I would be surprised if we took care of 5% of the problems. But since 2010, we've been doing 100% e-prescribing, so we could go reach into our EMR and say, give us the data. Again, use the EMR as a hammer. Use it as a tool to practice better medicine. Don't use it as a hindrance. And of the 18 physician group, we found 241 people who were on both amlodipine and simvastatin. And what we did is we called up these people and we said, you know, we would like to have a conversation because some of you we may have to reduce the dose, some of you we may have to switch the medicine, some of you we may have to do nothing. But we just want you to be aware. So we virtually contacted 100% of our people. And again, our patients were absolutely shocked that A, we had the capability, and B, we had the willingness to contact them and say, hey, we would rather prevent you from getting sick rather than treat you after you already got sick or had a side effect from something that we prescribed. Again, very good for your clinic image and very good, just good medicine. The other number that's interesting there is prior to this date, it was recommended not to use gemfibrozil with simvastatin, but was not an absolute contraindication. At this time, it's now a complete contraindication, and we had to call up those 23 patients and say, sorry, we need to come up with a different plan because this is just absolutely not acceptable medicine anymore. And again, we could not have done that if we didn't use and didn't have access to the EMR, e-prescribing, and a hammer. You know, so again, if you've heard that over and over again, is don't think of the EMR. If you don't try and replicate your paper record on a computer. If you do that, the EMR will be a giant pain for you, and it won't give you the results of the data you want. Think of the EMR as a hammer. Think of it as a stethoscope. Think of it as a very defined tool that allows you to practice better medicine. And last but not least, be bold. You know, these are not easy times, and as I told you at the very first, the whole idea of me as a physician saying, I have to let go, and if I let go, my patients will actually get better care, was really tough. Don't be afraid to take that big step. If you're crossing this quality chasm, you cannot do it in baby steps. Sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and take the big step and make the effort. And again, the true winners of this will be your patients. And again, that's why all of us went to med school. That's why all of us are here in the business we're in. And again, I'd like to say thank you for listening, and we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Standing by for questions.
This is Nancy, and I've had a couple of requests come through on access in the PowerPoint slides, and Dr. Cashin, I'm sure you're quite comfortable with us releasing these slides out to our registered folks?
Yep.
Okay. We'll make those available through the registration process. We should have some email addresses, so we'll send those out. And then we'll also be posting them on our website for the QIO, and I would guess to this, so our partner states will also be doing the same. So First way, you do the registration, and you can always go to the QIO website and find those as well. Thank you.
The one thing I would say about the Access and the Excel, it's a very common theme with the EMR, is you put all your work in ahead of time. So I'm not going to lie to you. It was a fair amount of work setting up the Excel spreadsheet and setting up all the rules and all the things that we wanted to do and flag our data the way we wanted it. But once it was done, everything since then has been gravy. It's been an incredible time saver. I would say the same thing about the EMR. Set up as many things in the EMR to do things the way you want them done, and then when you're working real time with the patients, that's the time you save that to me is golden. That gives you extra time to work with the patient and less time working with the computer.
And we have a question from Sarah. Your line is open.
Hi. This is Sheree Murphy, and I'm a care coordinator at Lynn Community Care in Iowa. I'm in Cedar Rapids. And we loved your presentation. Sarah and I were sitting here, and we have been struggling with so many of these issues. And one thing that I was interested in many things, but one thing that comes to mind that I was interested in, are all of the nurses that you have in your facility, are they CMAs, are they RNs, LPNs? What are their different levels of practice?
In our clinic building is only CMAs, and we have one LPN, but they all function at the same level. The rest are CMAs, as is our care coordinator.
What kind of education do you provide for them? Is there an ongoing system, or did you, at the beginning, front-load it so that everyone starts at the same level?
We front-loaded it, and then we could do it continuously. So every so often, whether it's 3 or 6 months, we will have either refresher courses that we do over the noon hour for everyone, or we do updates and things along that line, because we think this is part of this continuous quality improvement, is that while we have taught them, and I will tell you that our MAs, when we get a new MA, and unfortunately we had a little turnover last year, which is one of the reasons why I think my numbers went down, is because, again, as I said, my team supports me so well. But the PAs will take, or the CMAs will take the other CMA aside and says, you know, you will have a great time here, but you will work your tail off. I don't have to lay those limits down. Our CMAs will do it for us because they believe that, but they are really focused. And as I said, we had some turnover. One of our CMAs left to go work a little closer to her home, and probably with some monetary constraints there. But within 3 months, she was back. She just didn't like working for a place that wasn't as focused on quality as we were and wasn't as focused on patient care.
Well, we definitely applaud you and all your successes, and we hope to be able to replicate some of them, because it's definitely, to me, it's not the idea of creating the idea. It's finding the good ones and then using them for your success.
Absolutely.
So, I just want to be able to contact you so that we can learn from many of the trials and errors and successes that you've had, because that's just amazing. So my assistant was sitting here, Sarah, and she's like, we're doing that all by hand. I'm like, yeah, we are.
And if you're doing it by hand, it doesn't work. I mean, it's just too much work. So I just put on my contact information. You feel free to contact me, both email, phone. You know, I'm pretty open. As I said, I am not anybody special. I am a small-town doc who loves his patients and loves to take good care of them.
I think you're a pretty special small town doc. So we will contact you. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks.
Dr. Cashman, there's a couple questions on the chat. Do you see those? One from asking about community pharmacists.
Yes. Let me see them. Okay. Yeah. Do you include community pharmacists to be part of the team-based care? What role do you feel the pharmacists play? We do use community pharmacists. We have a very good relationship. Now, again, in River Falls, we have about 4 or 5 pharmacies. In Ellsworth, we only have 1 pharmacy. And so we are on a first-name basis with every one of our community pharmacists. They have the ability to call us at any time if they see something that we haven't done, or that like a drug interaction, or are you aware that somebody else has this patient on a different medication or something along those lines. It is done completely collegiality-wise. There's not an actual contract or something like that, but we view them as part of the team as well. They're a little more loose from the standpoint of we have no control, but on the other hand, we have aligned incentives and we work together with them. And I would not underestimate the role a pharmacist plays, especially with anything like diabetes or hypertension that requires a significant pharmaceutical management. Let me see if I can find one or the other one. So how do you get the number for the statistics? Well, guess what? The health plan pays for all of that. So they have actually very good modeling of how many patients they insure with these illnesses and what their expectations are. And they can see these numbers drop. They have huge data analytics capabilities. So when we began, did we get pushback from the physicians was another question. And the answer to that was, yeah, the physicians up north kind of said, you guys go off and do your own things. Once we showed superior numbers and we were no longer the dumpy little sister, or however you want to put it, satellite clinic, but we were the ones getting recognized and we were the ones documenting that we were providing better care, they took notice, and as I said, they improved the care they provided. And as I said, I think competition is a good thing. But they measurably improved it. It means kudos to them. They didn't sit on the sidelines and complain. They said, okay, we see it works. We don't want to be known as the second tier quality. We want to be, you know, we want to be equals. And they proved it, and that's documented this year.
And we have a question from Jane McGrath. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Kasdan. Question for you in terms of community relationships that you've been building. I know one of your comments earlier was that, you know, you see the patients 20% of the time and 80% of the time, you know, they're out in the community. Can you
talk? We're responsible for 20% of the health.
Okay. So we know that there are, you know, they might have social workers, they might have public health. Can you talk a little bit about how or if you started to work on a broader base with other professionals within the community but outside of the clinic setting?
Sure. Is that we have, and we're still working on this because we work with the ambulance service, we work with the, you know, that they'll be willing to do blood pressures on anybody, anytime. We work with the local nursing home who's willing to do that. We work with public health, who's willing to set up fairs and clinics and things like that. What I'd like to see us do, and what I've seen work in the South that we have not done, is I'd love to get all the churches together and say, you know what, let's have Blood Pressure Sunday. And, you know, we can provide a nurse, or oftentimes the congregations will have their own nurse that would be willing to do Blood Pressure Sunday in the setting when people are, you know, where we can reach people that don't normally come into our office. And so I think that was one way that we have not done yet, but that I could envision doing. But schools would be another, is that while that would be, I've seen it done in the schools where they work on the children's teeth, we can work on the children's health just as well.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Dr. Toshin, there's a question about what EMR vendor that you currently use.
Well, we're trying to be neutral, so I will answer it because it's asked, and then I will tell you something that I think is even more important. So we use Cerner, and we've been very happy with Cerner. But we use, as I said, we're a small clinic, so we use Cerner ASP, which is Application Service Provider, which means that Cerner houses all of the IT, and we access it through the Internet. And we have very little opportunity in actually customizing or changing the EMR. Now, we have great freedom to use the EMR the way we want to, and I'll give you an example of that. But by the fact that we're limited in what we can do to actually customize it means that we can always be on the latest update of the EMR. So as of today, we are on January of 2014 version. So it can do virtually everything that virtually any other EMR can do, and we are at state of the art. Our hospital, which is part of a big system, is a couple years behind because every time they upgrade, all of their customizations go haywire, and they can't seem to keep it up and running. And that's true of any vendor. They don't have Cerner, but even it doesn't matter, that the more you customize. Now, that being said, I said we use it in our own special way, and we made a decision that we found an order that said return to clinic. And we said we're going to use this order for this very specialized purpose. And the specialized purpose is we want everybody to have a return to clinic order. We want a date set. And then we're going to monitor this. We're going to have the computer kind of line these up chronologically so that if I say return to clinic in 6 months and 6 months passes and there's no appointment, somebody will look at that and say, ah, this patient hasn't come in and the doc wanted to see him and call them up and bring them in. Now, I don't think return to clinic was ever designed to do that or to put in orders that says when they come in, I want a CBC, a chem-aid, and a lipid. You know, 3 days prior to being seen. I don't think that was Cerner's intention, but we grabbed it and we used it in a manner that served us. That's what I said. It's a tool. It's how you use it that makes the difference. And so I'm really a proponent of looking at your EMR and coming up with creative ways to make it do what you want it to do and not vice versa.
Dr. Tashin, thank you so very much for your presentation today. We're just up to 1 o'clock, and I don't know, Jeanette, were there other questions in the queue? Or?
No, I'm showing no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, Dr. Tashin, thank you for putting up your contact information. I believe that you probably will get a few emails from some of us because you really have achieved your successes, taken some very bold steps, and I think we all applaud you for that.
Well, and again, my responsibility, it's not me, it's the team. It's very, you know, I'm the one talking, but they're the one doing the work.
Yes, thank you. That's a great message to close us out for the day. So, again, for those on the line, watch for your emails, and we'll be putting those slides out to you. And as always, feel free to contact your QIO and let us know what you're thinking and if there's any opportunities that we can help you along the way. And we wish you all a great afternoon.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.